Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we're focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Drive On podcast. Today, my guests, I have two of them today, are Matt Dubois and Kurt Weber. Matt and Kurt are both from Camp Resilience, which helps service members, veterans, first responders, and their loved ones recover and maintain their physical, psychological, and emotional well-being. Matt is a retired Navy captain who twice served as a Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense, and Kurt is a retired Army officer and Operation Iraqi Freedom veteran. So welcome to the show, Matt and Kurt. I'm glad to have you on.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. If you don't mind, I'd like to give you guys a chance to just tell a little bit about your backgrounds for those people who might be listening and not familiar with who you are, and also how you got involved with Camp Resilience. So Matt, maybe let's start with you, if you don't mind.
I don't mind at all. Thanks again, Scott. Matt Dubois, I'm a Army brat, so I didn't fall far from you both. I defected and went to the Navy. I was a 25-year Navy pilot. As you mentioned, my time in the Pentagon, I put on a suit and stayed in the Pentagon for a few years after that. Moved to New Hampshire to become a part-time, then full-time caregiver for my Army veteran father. Was doing a little private aviation work during that time and needed something a little more meaningful in my life. And Kurt and Camp Resilience were looking for an executive director, as they have been doing what they've been doing for so long in a largely volunteer capacity. They needed somebody to sort of fill in the blanks, and that's why I'm here.
And you know what? So your story and my story are kind of inversed. So my grandfather was in the Navy in World War II, and I ended up going to Army. So I can kind of see where you're coming from as far as switching things around a little bit.
Well, if you don't want to fly helicopters, you got to go elsewhere.
Yeah, exactly. How about you, Kurt? Would you mind giving a little background on yourself?
Yeah, sure. I'm also an Army brat, and grew up on Army posts all over the world, and then followed the family tradition and became a third generation soldier. Both of my sons are fourth generation soldiers. So I spent 23 years as infantry special forces, also a couple tours teaching at West Point. I retired in August of 01 and moved to Guilford, New Hampshire, started teaching at Lakes Region Community College, and 3 weeks into retired life, 9/11 hit. So the next day I was on the phone with my Ranger buddy, who was chief of staff of the 101st, saying, "Hey, I'm standing in the door. I'll come back." And as usual with the Army, nothing ever happens fast. But finally, I did end up going back on active duty in 05 and going to Iraq and working for General Petraeus, training the Iraqi Army. It was a couple MIT teams. I tell people I did kind of the scenic tour of the Sunni Triangle. The idea from about Camp Resilience came from a West Point classmate of mine, who was skiing at Gunstock. And there's a gentleman who lives here in Guilford who lost both arms to the shoulder in an industrial accident. And the guy's an amazing adapter skier. So this guy goes past my buddy later that day. My classmate and I were having a beer, and he goes, "This is such a beautiful area," talking about the Lakes Region of New Hampshire. "And there's so much to do, so many great outdoor sports activities. It would be a great place to do something for veterans." And so that was basically where the idea came from. And so, I talked to recruited some friends, most of them veterans, but not all, here in the Guilford area. And we put the Patriot Resilient Leader Institute together and started running Camp Resilience retreats in 2014. And since 2014, we've run 83 retreats, serving over 780 participants. And it's something that we really enjoy doing, and we know that we're making a difference in these folks' lives.
I'd love to talk a little bit more about these retreats and the type of things that you guys are doing with these veterans, the first responders, their families, and people like that. What types of things do you offer during these retreats? I know there's a bunch of different activities, and also how do they help the veterans in their recovery and their rehabilitation, perhaps?
You mind if I start, Kurt? So first of all, there's different themes of retreats, but our basic retreat model, 3 to 4 day, it combines facilitated peer-to-peer counseling, life skills workshops, and outdoor experiential learning. And of course, that's where the beauty and of Lake Winnipesaukee and the Lakes region comes into play as we bring them outdoors year round.
And that sounds like kind of like something I would just want to come and hang out as a vacation spot, right? It was the way you're describing it. And I'm originally from Connecticut, so I'm familiar with that part of the country. And we've taken trips up to New Hampshire and Vermont and stuff like that. But that region it's really nice. It's the type of place where you would go and just kind of hang out to relax. And that sounds like kind of like what some of the people who are coming up there really need in their life. It's just a way to kind of unwind, right?
Between those three elements that we talked about and the fact that they get to bond with their people like them. And I will say, just for the record, we just did a retreat that we combined both first responders and veterans for the first time. But by about 2 hours into the first day, it was just one big happy family. But the difference from when they walk in the door, and of course, getting them in the door is the hard part. The difference between them walking in the door and leaving 3 to 4 days later, they are different people. And of course, we do have a post-retreat follow-up for 6 months. And that's really the key, is to keep them striving in the right direction for the 6 months following the retreat. We don't want them to walk out the door and suddenly go back to where they were. Kurt, did I miss anything?
No. And I just, part of the attraction of the retreats is it is in a beautiful area, and it is, kind of like a vacation, but that's not really what it is. And we tell them when they show up during the welcome briefing that over the next 3 or 4 days, they're going to be exposed to different ideas, different coping mechanisms, different activities, with the goal being that they will all take something away that is going to help them improve their lives. And what works for Matt may not work for me, and vice versa. So, one of the examples I typically use this in my welcome briefing is meditation. I mean, meditation is a very powerful tool. It's very helpful for people. I've tried it and I can't do it. It's just not with my personality. I'm a great believer in it. I just can't personally do it. Yoga, on the other hand, I had never done yoga until one of the first retreats we ran. And the instructor was, Guilford's a small town, everybody knows each other. So the instructor was a guy I had coached football with. And I said, good luck with me. I've got the flexibility of a concrete post. Well, I really enjoy yoga and I plan to keep doing it. And that's kind of the idea, is that it's a combination, so it's the wellness activities, it's the outdoor sports activities, it's the different coping mechanisms. Yoga and meditation are absolutely coping mechanisms, as are, getting outside and communing with nature, going on a hike, or, the more, for lack of a better word, clinical type coping mechanisms, and maybe that's not really a good term. So, because there are coping mechanisms like journaling or painting, there's right. Art, we do equine retreats. That's a totally different critter, no pun intended. And that was the most recent retreat that Matt was talking about. And so in those cases, they're actually interacting and bonding with horses and learning valuable lessons from that. And so there's a wide variety of activities and experiences, but the goal is that they all, learn something and leave with specific goals to take the steps to take the lessons that they've learned to improve their lives. And, you know, the feedback that we have gotten, you know, over the last 8 years at 83 retreats is this is in fact what's happening. And
I think you hit on something, you both hit on something that is really important with all of this is that first off, one coping mechanism is not going to work for 100% of the people 100% of the time. There are many different coping mechanisms that are out there. And some people may hate going out into nature and hiking and stuff like that, but other people might love it and really find a connection where they're able to use that to help them in their own healing process. But other people may find painting or other kind of crafts or other journaling, things like that to really help them. But the whole point here is that you're exposing them to a wide variety of these different methods of coping and handling things so that they can try them out. You have a 3-4 day retreat program set up. They could try a whole bunch of these different things and take away the things that work. The nice thing about it is that they can learn the things that don't work so that they don't spend so much time on doing yoga if yoga is not for them, or doing meditation if meditation's not for them. They can focus on the things that do work for them and that they actually found were helping them. But then also that the follow-up that you were talking about as well, that 6-month follow-up afterwards, that to me, I think is probably even more important because you know, if you just do something once for a short period of time, it's not like a magic pill that's just going to automatically fix things. It takes work to continuously focus on this stuff and really make it a part of your life. So what do the follow-ups look like? You had mentioned that earlier, Matt. What do those follow-ups look like and what does that entail?
We use a online social media platform called Workplace, which is an offshoot of Facebook. Essentially, it's a private group that looks and feels a little like Facebook, but it's a little more professional. And because these groups come together and bond so quickly, they typically bond during our first activity on the first day and stay bonded really the whole time. And so this gives them a mechanism to communicate with each other, communicate with us, and it gives us a chance to ask them weekly to check in with us and let us know how they're doing on their coping skills. And like anything else, we get varying degrees of enthusiasm about this, but there are groups that are planning their, you know, reunions, but there are groups that really embrace that technology to keep in touch with each other and to let us know how they're doing. And at 6 months, we send them the same survey we sent them when they walked in the door and see how it compares.
That's important to do that data, right?
And the group dynamics that can't be emphasized enough. And you know, Matt's already mentioned, you know, how quickly they bond and they open up to each other and they support each other. And that's also part of the follow-up program with the workplace group is that we want them to encourage each other to stay in touch and encourage each other to continue to take the steps to, you know, improve their lives, to use what they learned to improve their lives. And again, we see that a lot. Again, there's it's never 100%, but we get a lot of the participants in there. Boy, they're posting every day and they're reaching out to their, you know, to their teammates. And that's an important part of the group dynamics is another huge part of the Camp Resilience retreats. We get feedback. It was so great to be with other veterans or to be with other first responders. I felt safe. I felt comfortable because isolation is a big problem with veterans and first responders. And so, you know, the group nature of the retreats and trying to keep the groups together virtually after the retreats with our workplace groups, that's also very important.
Yeah, I know just from doing this podcast, I talk to veterans all the time. And this, this episode here is going to be episode 188. I've talked to over 100 veterans, probably 150 plus veterans. And every time that I talk to somebody that maybe at the beginning of the episode, we had never spoken to each other before that episode started, but by the end of it, we formed a connection and we're talking 45 minutes, maybe an hour of conversation, and we formed a connection. And a lot of times we stay in touch afterwards and we kind of follow up with each other and we just help each other out in one way or another. You know, it could be a business connection, hey, I thought about you or whatever, and just trying to help each other out. But there is that connection that comes with veterans that, to me, I don't get that in any other group of people that I've ever been involved with. Like the military community, the veterans are really great at coming together and helping each other out with things like that. So that's a huge benefit to have. And you're right, the isolation happens when people come back home and they feel like they are not able to connect with the civilians in their neighborhood or in their communities. And they just say, okay, you know what, the heck with it. I'm just going to wall myself off and I'm just going to be isolated. I'm just going to be this, grumpy old veteran who's sitting by himself at home and just, not really integrating into society at all. But when you realize that there's other people out there who are like you, who have similar background, similar, mindset and stuff like that, then you're able to make those connections and actually have those kind of relationships that you might have had while you're in the service, right?
And when you start talking about transitioning out of the service, that's something where Matt has a wealth of experience. So I think that's an important issue to discuss. So, Matt?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that these camps, Scott, aren't day camps. People don't come in the morning and leave in the afternoon. They spend the night. That is part of the bonding experience. Usually it's in a local inn, but interestingly enough, the equine retreat that we just did, we do that at a facility called Upreach that's sort of outside the Lakes region, but it's perfect for this kind of retreat. And they actually keep us in a house all together right there on the property. So nobody has to really get in their car. Nobody has to leave. I was actually a little nervous. I know we've done this successfully before, but putting people age ranges from 20 to sometimes 70 in shared rooms and sometimes 3, 4, 5 people in a room. I was a little worried that, and so as were they. Interestingly enough, it turned into sort of an accelerator on the bonding experience. While people were a little nervous about, he snores, that kind of thing. But by the first evening, these guys didn't want to go to bed. They just wanted to talk to each other until they couldn't talk anymore. It was really, really cool.
Yeah. And that's almost like that kind of bonding experience that you might get in some of the open bay barracks that you might have in like basic training or, other things like that, where you're with each other 24/7. If someone snores, you know about it. Like, you know everything about everyone and you kind of develop those connections. And not to say that you necessarily need to know the intimate details of all these people, but you end up getting that kind of connection. And so that, like you said, it probably does accelerate that type of stuff pretty well.
It does. And so I'm sorry to skip over what Kurt said. Kurt wanted to talk about transition. Anyway, I ran the transition program in the Pentagon for, 250,000 people a year. Getting people off active duty. I mean, it takes us a while to make people from civilians into soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines. The fact that we think we can turn them back into civilians in 2 days of lectures is pretty silly. There's all kinds of groups like ours out there that help directly with transition, whether it be getting a job, finding out what you want to be when you grow up, those kinds of things. We are partnered in our transition. We do transition retreats of a different nature. In fact, starts next week, we have a special operations couples retreat that is largely focused around transition. It is different in that it's a 3-day retreat followed by some online courses when they go home, followed by another 3-day retreat. And we partner with a nonprofit called Nostos, and they use the methodology rather than, hey, this is how you network, this is how you write a resume. They basically say, what brings you happiness? And let's try to build a career around what makes you happy, rather than going and finding a job and trying to figure out how to be happy around that. And so that's the model we use. A lot of work to be done sort of, you know, nationwide in transitioning veterans. One of the things that we helped with is companies that say they want to have hire veterans may not know what that means exactly and may not know how to keep them once they get them. So making sure that companies are ready for veterans is also something that quite honestly needs to be more of out there.
Yeah, there does. Because I think the statistic is, I forget the exact percentage, but a very high percentage of veterans after transitioning leave their first job within the first year or two because just because the company is either not ready for veterans or they're not ready for that type of environment that they're walking into. And so they end up leaving those jobs. And so that's kind of a shame too. If you find
most veterans don't know what they want to do after they get out, because they don't know what's available. They just know what they know. And it's a matter of showing them what else is possible.
Right. And I think, everybody hears about the distressingly high levels of veteran suicide. And I'm pretty sure, I'm not sure if I could actually point to the empirical evidence. I'm sure it's might be out there, but I suspect that a lot of those are due to unsuccessful transitions because they left the military where they were part of a team and they had a mission and they had a purpose. And then suddenly they're out in the civilian world. They don't know what the heck they're going to do with each other. They get frustrated because they're dealing with issues that people don't understand. And I think a lot of that probably leads to suicide. So I think, the type of coping mechanisms that we can share with them during the Camp Resilience retreats, plus some of the help in the transition. And so, we have done a number of retreats, that help with transition either before the fact or after the fact and retreats to help veterans who are going back to school. In fact, we're going to be, we're just talking about doing another one this coming January. That's very important too, because, for somebody who spent five, six years in the military, and then they come back and they go to a community college or a 4-year school it's a whole new world for them in there. They're dealing with, 18-year-old kids and college professors and so there's all sorts of coping mechanisms you got to learn for that environment too. And so there's lots and lots of things, that needs that are out there. And we try to meet some of them. Like I said, transition is a huge issue. We run couples retreats because, military life is tough on couples, and it's tough after you get out too. And helping couples develop better relationships are also important. And we do family retreats for the same type of things, help military families, help military couples do better.
Yeah, and it sounds like there's a trend going on, because this is not the first time that I've heard stuff like this, where an organization is looking at more than just one narrow issue with the veterans. They're looking at more of a holistic view, where you're looking at transition, you're looking at employment, you're looking at education, you're looking at mental health and physical. You're looking at a lot of different aspects and trying to help create a person who not create, but help a person get to the point where they are happy in all of these areas of their lives, and not just focusing on the one, because one area might have an impact on another. Like you said, with the transition into a career that isn't really what they're happy with, that could transition into their home life. And then that causes problem with their marriage. And then that causes mental health issues, and it just a snowball effect of all this stuff going on, right? So I love to hear that you're looking at this more than just a narrow focus on one singular issue. You're looking at kind of the overall health of the veterans, right?
Interestingly enough, Kurt touched on student veterans. Despite the billions of dollars we're throwing at the GI Bill, the number of veterans that walk away with a degree is shockingly low.
Really?
And that is largely because, I won't tell you there aren't veterans out there that take the GI Bill just so they get the stipend and don't have to go to work. That probably exists. But most veterans really don't know what they're getting into, and many of them haven't been to school in many, many years. And so there are organizations out there, VSOs, that do academic boot camps and things like that. But ultimately, you know, they have to be ready for whatever challenge takes them and it meets them. And that's one of the things that Camp Resilience hopes to do with these retreats we're going to add targeting student veterans in the next few years.
Right. Yeah, we've had in the a couple of student veteran retreats we've run in the past, and we had a retired VA psychologist, also was a professor at Bridgewater State, and she gave just a really fascinating led a workshop about how PTSD affects your studies. And that really opened my eyes. And I remember listening to that and said, man, I wish I had known that, you know, 10, 15 years prior to that, when I was teaching and I had veterans in my class, and being a veteran myself, you know, I'm trying to figure out what's going on. Why are these folks struggling? And I didn't understand that now that I do. So there's, like I said, there's so many different things that areas that we can focus on, and we try to do as much as we can.
Yeah, and one of the things you mentioned earlier is finding a job that people actually enjoy doing. And I've heard this saying before, is if you find a job that you love, you'll never work a day in your life, because you go to work and you actually you're happy to be there. It's not like a drag getting yourself out of bed and getting yourself going to work. It's not like one of those types of things where many people are out there and they hate the work that they do, but they're doing it because they need the paycheck, they need to put the food on the table and all that stuff. But I like this approach where it's like, okay, what do you like doing? What makes you happy? Let's find something that will not only give you a paycheck, but also will make you happy in the process. So, maybe it won't be the highest paycheck in the world if you're, you know, looking for that, but it's something that not only are you getting paid, but you're also happy doing it. And I think that's probably more important, right, than just a paycheck.
It is. In fact, when Kurt was talking about, suicides and the things that prevent that, the biggest protective factor, in somebody's life for that is employment. And, meaningful employment that you really enjoy is just that much better.
Right. And I heard another study that had something to do with the level of happiness that people have and their versus their income. And I think it was like after you exceed maybe $60,000 or $70,000, I forget exactly what the number is, the happiness level just kind of plateaus. And you could be making $70,000 or you could be making $500,000, and you're going to be just as equally happy as far as the finances go. Right. So
it's funny you say that. I know a couple of folks who make millions and they are not happy at all.
Right.
It doesn't always go hand in hand. It's a matter of what makes you happy.
Exactly. Yeah. They could be making millions and doing something that they don't enjoy doing. And that's just not going to keep the happiness up for too long. The money can only go so far. Hmm. So I found that hearing about programs like this, talking about them, you know, like what we've been doing for this episode here, talking about them is a good first step, but sometimes it helps to hear about the success stories that you might've had with obviously keeping individuals' privacy, names and things like that out of it. But you know, anything that you might be able to share might be able to help people really understand what the program's all about.
Yeah, and I can think of, you know, a number of who have you know, told us that we've made a big difference in their lives. We've had a number who have said we saved their lives. I know it was like, you know, that poem I shared with you earlier where, you know, she said, you know, learning that you're not alone. I mean, so in many cases, you know, it's just, it's the retreat experience as a whole and the friendships and the bonding that they get with the other veterans that they maintain after the retreat. So they don't feel alone and you know, again, whatever tool they took away, whether it be meditation or, you know, rock climbing or whatever helps them, we know that that's working. And because continually hear from our alumni who tell us that it's made a big difference.
When our veterans come, they very rarely go back in standard formation or jump back in a tank or back in a plane, but our first responders are largely still on active duty. Right. So when we talk about saving lives, it may not be their lives that we're talking about. They go back and they're better cops, better firefighters, better EMTs because of the experience they had with us. And, you know, they may not be so quick to do something that, you know, they might have done based on some of their invisible wounds, based on some of the coping skills we've taught them and the experience they've had at Camp Resilience. So again, that's not a specific example, but it's worth knowing that most of our first responders actually go back to work after the retreats.
And I think that's important to note too, is that difference between the veterans and the first responders, because a lot of, like you said, a lot of those first responders are going back to work, and it is important to have them have that clear head, the level head, to be able to make snap decisions and make them in a responsible way, and make them so that they aren't putting themselves or other people in harm's way unnecessarily.
They told us it makes them better husbands, better fathers, better brothers, better friends, et cetera. So all of that is goodness. And it's, you know, it's easy to hop out of bed in the morning when you think about things like that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that that's really important, knowing that their overall picture of their lives are going to find some sort of improvement with their home life, their professional life, their, you know, their friends, their family, all that stuff, their relationships will just get better. They'll have, better coping mechanisms in place so that they can deal with the things that they might be still struggling with them, but they'll have a better way to cope with those things as they go through their lives. Right. So that just makes things overall better.
Right. And it's important that, and again, this is for both the military, the veterans, and the first responders, and this is difficult for many of them, you know, to, you know, accept that they can ask for help, that it's okay for them to say that they need help because, you know, they are exposed, you know, in some cases on almost a daily basis, but pretty much all of them are encounter traumatic events and, you know, things that, you know, give them problems right after the event, but sometimes years afterwards. And, you know, I think we as a society and the military and the first responder community have finally, you know, started to come to realize that this is not an acknowledgement of weakness. You know, it's the body's natural reaction to stress and traumatic events. That's what PTSD is, you know, or PTS is. And, you know, it's nothing to be ashamed of. And you know, I think that's probably one of the important takeaways from that many of these folks get is that, you know, it's okay to ask for help and to seek help, and it's going to improve their lives. And and again,
permeating the leadership of these organizations too. I mean, there are Most people support it. So the Sergeant Major of the Army actually tweets when he takes a mental health day, because he wants everybody to know that it's okay to do just that. We always say if you sprained your ankle, you go see a doctor and you get it fixed, right? So there's fixes for this too. You gotta know how to do it and know that it's okay to go do it.
Right. And it's completely normal. It's completely natural to be experiencing some of these symptoms that you might be experiencing based on the traumatic events that you might have experienced. So like you said, you have a physical injury, you go to the doctor and you get it fixed. Like no one is casting any judgment on you. Like, gee, why can't you go, ruck or run or whatever with that broken ankle or that the sprained ankle? Well, obviously you can't because you're broken. Something needs to be fixed. Why can't you, process things with, a normal, clear head that you might've had before the trauma? Well, of course you can't, because there's something going on up there that needs some addressing. And that's exactly what Camp Resilience and other organizations out there are doing. And I feel that, it's really important to shed light on the work that you guys are doing so that the veterans, the first responders, their families are able to get the help that they need. For anyone that might be interested, what do they need to do in order to get involved and participate in these retreats?
Well, first we have a website, camp-resilience.org. That's a great place to start. That will give people the schedule of our upcoming retreats. And we do them by year. So probably by the end of the summer, early September, we'll have next year's retreats scheduled out. Probably a good time. I mentioned earlier that we have different theme retreats, and Kurt's touched on family retreats and couples retreats. We also do retreats for caregivers. We've talked about adding for student veterans. We're going to add an adaptive sports retreat or two next year, probably as well, for those who may not be as mobile as everyone else. We're doing one this year for those that are about to get or have recently obtained service dogs, care and feeding of the dog and all those things. And also one other retreat that we added last year that was a big hit was a creative wellness retreat, where we brought in some songwriters from Nashville, stayed in the house that they stay in for the equine retreats, and they wrote songs and went to museums and had a good old time. And apparently it was more successful and more moving than everybody expected it to be.
That's great. And I'm imagining, since Camp Resilience and the organization that surrounds it is a nonprofit, I'm sure you guys have some needs as far as finances and volunteers go, right? What types of things are you looking for help with, and how can people get involved with that?
Well, again, Matt mentioned the website. So the website is a great place to go to not only find out about our retreats if you're interested in coming to a retreat if you're a veteran or first responder, but there's also information about being a volunteer. We are still mostly a volunteer organization, so we're always looking for volunteers who might want to help out with a retreat. And it can be a veteran or it could be not a veteran, just a citizen who wants to give back. So typically, we'll send out an email to our pool of volunteers a couple of weeks before a retreat saying, okay, here's the schedule for this retreat. What do you want to do? So typically show up for lunch and go out on the hike, or show up for lunch and go kayaking, since it's voluntary, you do as much or as little as you want. And so, but there's also information on the website to how to volunteer to help out with Camp Resilience. And then there's also information on how to donate, because we're a 501c3 charitable organization. And like every other charitable organization out there, we need donations, to be able to continue to accomplish our mission.
Absolutely.
Did I miss something, Matt?
Go ahead.
The only thing, if you don't mind me adding, is we also have a couple of fundraising events throughout the year that we need both volunteer help for, as well as donations, sponsor support. On July 15th, we will be doing our second annual Green Beret with a Mission Challenge, where we go out to a farm out in the middle of New Hampshire and We have teams that run around and compete against each other doing special force kind of stuff. We were out walking the course just the other day, and I can tell you just walking the course isn't easy. So running it in a competition with backpacks and all the, you know, weapons and all that stuff will be quite a bit harder. But if anybody's interested in either competing, volunteering, or sponsoring that, please, if you don't mind, I can give my phone number or email. It's up to you, Scott.
Yeah, go ahead. Either one that you want to give out there.
My phone number is 703. Yep. My phone number is 703-209-4276. And my email is mdubois@camp.resilience.org. And I will, if I can't answer the question, I will point him in the right direction. So that's event number one. Event number two is we are going to do a motorcycle ride around the lake in September. And since I don't ride a motorcycle, I just go sit at the venue and keep the barbecue going while everybody's riding around. So people are welcome to come join me and sit in the sun at the lake. Of course, if anybody wants to sponsor Camp Resilience directly, they can do that as well. And we have levels of sponsorship that I'll be happy to talk to them about. We take donors and sponsorships, big and small.
Yeah. And it sounds like you have the prime time job at that motorcycle event there where
you're the best man on the barbecue. Keep the food warm and the beer cold.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the job I'd like to have. Anything else before we wrap up here? Anything else that you guys want to add about Camp Resilience or anything in general that might be beneficial to the listeners?
The one thing that I would just like to, you know, I already kind of mentioned it, is that, you know, the participants of the retreats learn that it's okay to not be okay. It's okay to ask for help and to realize that, you know, because of your service, it's you know, not unexpected for you to be dealing with issues like PTSD or depression. But probably the biggest challenge is to get the folks to actually make that first step and come to the retreat. And in many cases, we see when they show up and you can tell they're not really sure they want to be there. And they'll say, I'm here because my therapist told me I should come, or my wife or my husband or this or that. And it, like Matt has already said, it doesn't take long. Within the first hour or two of the retreat, you know, they've bonded with the other participants. They feel comfortable. They feel safe. They're happy. They're there. It's getting them there in the first place. So, you know, spreading the word that, you know, I think any veteran or first responder could benefit from one of our retreats, even if you don't think that you're dealing with any issues. I know I learn stuff at every retreat we run. And, so, you know, spreading the word that not only that these programs like Camp Resilience exist, but, you know, go do it. You'll be better for it in the long term. That's probably the biggest challenge. So that's what I would like to end up with.
Our demand for our services exceeds our supply. One of the reasons they brought in a full-time executive director is to try to grow to meet that demand. While I'd love for people to volunteer and donate with Camp Resilience, if that's not what they want to do, I'm sure the other organizations across the country are experiencing the same shortages of resources and personnel to meet the demand in this area. So if they don't want to give to us, although they should, then they can go and give to anyone in their local area. I would encourage them to volunteer and donate to the organization like ours near them.
Absolutely. I think organizations like this are essential to getting the veterans the help that they need, the first responders, their families, the caregivers, everyone who's involved in their lives, the help that they need to get back on track. And you're right, there are organizations all over the country that are doing similar things. So, you know, if you don't happen to be in the New Hampshire area, I'm sure there's other organizations that are nearby that you can help out with, support. you know, for the listeners who maybe aren't looking necessarily to get involved as far as a participant, but have the means and resources to volunteer or donate, you know, definitely do that, because without organizations like this, we're relying on like government organizations like the VA, which nothing wrong with them, but they have limited resources too. And so we need to do as much as we can as a community to help each other out. And, you know, that I think is really important. So, you know, whatever you can do to help out these organizations, definitely do reach out. And for the people who...
Just one more correction. We serve the entire New England area, not just New Hampshire. The truth of the matter is we serve anybody who can get here on their own. We don't pay for transportation costs. So if somebody wants to drive from outside the New England area, we will take them.
Wonderful. But we cover all the other costs.
We do. Yeah. Everything else is no cost to the veteran or first responder.
Perfect. And you know, that was an important point I wanted to touch on earlier, that it is no cost to the veteran other than the transportation. But you know, that probably should make it a little bit easier for them to get in touch and reach out and say, you know, okay, I'll do this. You know, if there's not that financial burden that they have, then it should just be easier for them to reach out and participate. So for anyone who wants to get involved, for the listeners, check out the show notes. I'll have links to Camp Resilience and all of the information that you might need to get involved. Whether it's donations or finding out, you know, how to participate in some of these retreats, I'll have the information available for you. So check that out in the show notes. Matt and Kurt, I'm really glad that you were able to come on the show today and talk about Camp Resilience. It's been a pleasure speaking with you today. I really do appreciate you taking the time out of your day to come and share what you guys do.
Well, thanks for having us.
Thanks, Scott. Thanks for everything you do.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Drive On Podcast.